Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I am the Director of Digital Services and the Social Media Evangelist, New Media Guru, people like to sit around my desk, Eastwick Communications. Wish that were true, actually. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick, all in the grand scheme of things to figure out where influence lies these days. Today is April 3rd, 2009, on yet another beautiful San Francisco Bay Area day, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Kevin Spear of Bunchball. Kevin, are you with us?
I am here.
Fantastic. He is working at a technology company that really takes the word community, and we'll get into whether that that word is right to really describe what they do. But taking it in the broadest sense, community to a whole new level, and I'll let him tell you about that. How are you this afternoon, Kevin?
I am doing wonderfully well, thank you.
As always, and
yes.
We should probably let folks know, in the interest of transparency, that we know each other from roles at previous companies. For me, it was at MediaZone, a South African-backed online video contender that consolidated operations to their base at just the right time. Your company contracted with us on a number of really great projects, and I just thought I'd segue that into how you came to choose Bunchball, because you're the kind of guy that I know is very sought after in the Valley and is a real go-getter.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words. Basically,
true.
I was thank you. I was at my former company, M3i Works, and someone who I had gone to high school with 20 years ago, I happened to see him at a Web 2.0 event. And we say, hey, haven't seen you for 20 years. Let's grab lunch. And he and I began speaking a little bit. And a few months later, he said, hey, Kevin, I need to get some strong salespeople in here because our product is launching and it's a great product and I need some good people. And I said, oh, well, I know some people. So let's talk again and grab another lunch and maybe I'll know some folks that I can recommend. And as he went through the product is called Nitro here at Bunchball, all of a sudden I started going, wow, that is really cool. And, oh, my God, it can do this and it can do that. And, whoa. And so relatively soon we started talking about, well, so you need a salesperson, huh? Let's talk a little bit more. Perhaps I'll take over that area of the company. So one thing led to another, and they made an offer, and I came on board, just seeing the potential of this product and the companies that were quite interested and continue to be interested and folks coming on board, just a great opportunity.
So before we get into really what the space is and some definitions and context, let's whet people's appetites. Let's tell us some of the big name companies that you've worked with so people can start to understand why they should care about Bunchball.
Yeah, so right now NBC, most people have heard of the show The Office with Dwight Schrute and Michael Scott and so on. They're using our
forgot Jim.
I'm sorry.
Don't forget Jim and Pam. Don't forget
Jim
and
Pam.
Pam.
Yes, that's true.
Jim
and
Pam
are our favorites. I guess they're kind of the 21st century Ross and Rachel.
They absolutely are. Very good. That's very good.
Thank you. And Comcast, they've been with us. We've launched with them back in October, and they are seeing fantastic success. Hearst Properties, Meredith, I'm not quite sure if I can quite say, but we signed a letter of intent with two more major broadcast companies or major broadcast stations last week. I can probably tell you that who those are in a couple weeks. But yeah, these companies are finding that folks want to be engaged with them, but companies have not done a very good job of setting up parameters and setting up systems and communities, really, as you mentioned, where people will get the reward and have their desires met in order to continue to engage and stay in touch with those brands or companies or whatever the case may be.
And I think I can mention, too, that you did the Quantum of Solace campaign as well around the film that came out last summer.
Yeah, so that's something that we put together for them that we're discussing. The studios are changing on that, so we'll – that'll hopefully be upcoming. We'll be able to have some more announcements about that. But that is
But the whole idea of, you know, I think what I am hearing and kind of relaying that again to the everyday person, why do I care about a company that works with communities about these, about engagement? And I think, you know, kind of the way that it relates is if the big media companies that sort of have us engaged, you'd think, by watching shows like The Office, which maybe don't do as well in the ratings, but we know they do killer amounts of money on iTunes. They are watched on DVRs. But if they're caring about online activity, it makes me think that we should be caring in the technology community at large and sort of as people at large, because we're really the target audience for this. So
yes.
Going back to kind of pardon?
Oh yeah, I was going to say absolutely. I mean, the data shows that more and more eyeballs just continue to move online, and folks are really struggling. Big companies and big brands are struggling to figure out how can we exploit those eyes online and for revenue and for engagement and to, you know, build that brand loyalty and brand advocacy. So far, people have been having a very difficult time in transferring that to the online world. When one looks at the dollars spent on TV versus online, and when one looks at the viewers and the time spent TV and online, it doesn't make any sense. You know, the numbers being spent on TV advertising and branding are just, they dwarf the online marketing spending. So we're able to, you know, these types of activities are able to help provide that value to the marketing people and the brands to be able to get those eyes that are online to pay attention to them.
And an interesting note, too, I think for companies that go, oh, well, that's very consumer-focused, I think that, you know, I was at Web 2.0 Expos, you know, and yesterday I spent almost, actually all of the sessions I did during the day were on, had something to do with enterprise in the 2.0 environment. So B2B companies are looking at this as well, as you mentioned, with some of the clients that you can reveal that you're working with, but it's an incredibly important thing for lots of different kinds of companies that touch us in different ways.
Yes, like for example, Salesforce.com, we're currently working with them, and you know, in that more B2B sense, people really want to be engaged with and have a relationship with the brands that they care about and they like. People, you know, there's a very active online community on Salesforce.com where people ask questions, they answer questions, and people don't necessarily need monetary reward, but they do like to be recognized for what they're doing to help themselves, to help others, to help Salesforce.com, you know, make a better product so that everybody benefits. And our product really allows companies to put, you know, widgets and reward and incentive systems on their community sites to really help recognize those folks that, you know, are there because they like to be there and they want to be there. And if the brand or company is able to speak to them in a way that's relevant to them and that resonates with them, which doesn't mean let me just throw up more banner ads or ads that I think you'll like on the right side of the page, since, you know, all the eye studies show that us human beings are very good at evolving, and we have evolved to the point where we don't even see those banner ads anymore or those ads on the side. But if I'm able to earn a badge or a trophy or have some type of recognition, or there's a leaderboard, and that leaderboard may be sponsored by a company or have a sponsorship or revenue piece of it, then both the consumer or the, you know, the person in the community is paying attention to that, because they care about, oh, I'm earning my Salesforce.com points, or I'm earning, you know, a Best Buy reward, a Best Buy reward trophy. And that, I'll pay attention to that. But the Best Buy flashing ad at the top, I won't even see it. So that's definitely, I think, one example of where, you know, there's people want to be recognized, and we really allow companies to recognize the folks that they want to be, which then, of course, incentivizes that user behavior that they care about.
Fantastic. So before we go too long, we keep, you know, referencing there, where users go, the there where they go. So that leads me to the question about community. So when, as a product, your company is serving to do what, and how do you define the places where you are doing them? So where are the theirs for you?
Great question. So basically, overall, the sweet spot here over the last year has been, you know, online communities and, you know, websites where folks are going, congregating, talking, having conversations, and that we are then able to tap in to the human desires for reward, status, self-expression, altruism, competition, and so on those particular sites. So a community where people want to know that, as I mentioned before, that they're being recognized. So if I have answered 55 questions in a wonderful way that is helping people to do their job better or helping people gain more enjoyment from being a part of the community, I like to have, you know, a couple stars next to my name. eBay does this very well. I think most people feel more comfortable buying a product from a seller on eBay that has 5 stars next to their name rather than just one. They've earned that level of respect, and they profit from doing so. And so the folks who are on communities, they want to be rewarded in the same manner. You know, they have the stars next to their name so that when they say something, people pay more attention. There was a story about a guy at the Dell customer support site where customers talk to each other, and he had answered something like 14,000 questions over the past 10 years helping other customers, all out of the goodness of his own heart. Dell never monetarily rewarded him for that, but he really enjoyed being known as the expert there. So this, the community online, it's being able to give companies the tools that will help incent those behaviors they want, and whether that's through a virtual currency or points. For example, on Dunder Mifflin Infinity, that's the office website. When people perform tasks, or they're really fun activities, things like create a mixtape that Jim would send to Pam, or come up with office speak, so come up with fun words that describe what Michael Scott is doing or whatnot. And as people do these activities, they're earning Schrute Bucks. And then with their Schrute Bucks, as they earn more Schrute Bucks, named after Dwight Schrute from the show, they level up. Everybody starts off as a temp, and then you can become a warehouse employee or an accountant and within your virtual office online. And then with those Schrute Bucks, you can also purchase things for your virtual space. And as you can imagine, at DunderMifflinInfinity.com, the virtual space is a little office or a cubicle. As you level up in the community and become more valuable in the community, you get a nicer office, you get nicer doodads, and you can purchase more things for your space, thereby showing off your status and, you know, how cool and great you are. And these human desires to be able to be recognized and to show off really spread across everything, which is why from NBC.com to Salesforce, you know, people love to respond to earning badges and trophies and going towards something rather than just, oh, I'm on the site, I'm having a conversation, that was nice, goodbye. What's going to pull me back to come back to that site? Why will I choose to go back to X community over Y community? And it's likely because there's something pulling me back. And if I go back to X community 3 or 4 times, I will begin to be recognized for that. And that tends to be a great puller.
Which, so I should say as an aside, anybody making the mixtape should never put on the song Lovejoy by the Cardigans, because if anybody remembers the episode where Jim was annoying Pam with the song, it just didn't fly very well. But going back to what you were saying, I mean, obviously these are very intensely the kinds of things that you're incentivizing with and by, and the behaviors it looks like you're monitoring are very much a part of what the gaming community, I would think, have been very up on and aware of. Now, that's what I would think. So yeah. Am I wrong, or is this something where there is a lot of interplay with the gaming community? Maybe you even have gaming community clients on your roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our philosophy, the way our company kind of evolved, is we started out making online games for, and hence the name Bunch Ball. It's kind of people bunching around a game. So it was multiplayer games online. And what they figured out pretty quickly was, like, you know, we're really good at getting people addicted to games. And so my founder, Rajat Paharia, who, as I mentioned, I went to high school with him 20 years ago, he started thinking more deeply about it and started reading up on behavioral economics and so on, and, you know, the consumer measurement, and looking and realizing, you know, I'm quite good at making people addicted to games. What is it that makes people addicted to games? And there's a huge market out there to get people addicted to content, or to being a part of a brand, or, you know, a relationship with a company or a brand. And so that's where he kind of delineated. He said, you know, people respond to reward status, achievement, self-expression, competition, altruism, you know, being heard. And he realized that in the gaming world, that game designers have known for years, that I can address those things by using points or virtual currency and levels, trophies, challenges, avatars, virtual spaces, leaderboards, gifting and charity, and also really getting that instant feedback. Anytime I play a game, I know right now how well I'm doing. I know my status, I know where I'm going, I know where I've been, and I know what I want to do next. And what we found is that, say, you know, if you're on a publisher's site, you're there, you're reading the article, and now you're done. You don't know where you need to go. You don't know where you want to be. There's not something you're moving towards necessarily. So if we're able to help those publishers or help those companies provide the capability to, so that their consumers and their visitors and their users realize that they can be going towards something, they're far more likely to come back, to engage more deeply, and to engage more often.
I have to ask the devil's advocate question.
Yes.
Especially having worked together, you on the project side and myself for MediaZone, again, online video contender, and any other really media site. You know, a lot of these things we've seen play out on gaming websites of the past, most through CNET, which is now owned by CBS Interactive, which makes me wonder, would media sites eventually just build their own, or how does your product compete or sit next to the offerings that, say, CBS Interactive now has in its fold because they own GameSpot, GameSpot or GameSpy, but they own a number of gaming sites, obviously, that have some of these built-in features already.
Yeah, so definitely our biggest competition is people building it themselves. It's a relatively classic build versus buy scenario. What they found, you know, fortunately for us here, my team of Stanford and Harvey Mudd computer science engineers that sit behind me, they've been building this from day one to be platform agnostic. So what's nice is that when these companies want to go to third parties or have people on the Facebook pages or partner sites and they want it all to tie back, they can find that very difficult to do. A major media company that we've been talking to, actually, they're transferring two more properties to us because they've found that they've been spending over $1 million over the past year and a half trying to build this in-house while they used ours temporarily. And they're realizing, you know, it's just not worth it. We'd rather just license it out to you. So you're absolutely right. People can build it themselves. Then, as with most things, when it's not their core competence, you know, 6 months later when they want to upgrade and have new features, it's very difficult for them to do that. Plus, it tends to be very IT heavy, whereas our product, it is, I mean, you and I, well, you're probably a little more technical than I am, but anybody can run the entire program on the site. In fact, the folks at Comcast, they have a pretty significant, relatively complex community online that's using the Nitro products and so on. And the person who runs that program spends about a half hour a day updating, maintaining, and making sure that things are running smoothly, and he's not a technical person. So that tends to be very attractive, especially in today's day and age of IT costs and resources being slashed.
So the other part of that, this, of course, is, you know, when you talked about the Dell example earlier, and I think when we talked about it before, it was something like 22,000.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, the number changes depending on who you talk to, but
right.
It's a lot of questions that he answered. And I think his name was actually Joe, if I remember correctly. Talked to somebody else who had said it was Joe, and this is, of course, around the time of the election, so nobody's really sure if the person that I was talking to just thought Joe because of Joe the plumber that was going
right.
around at the time. But, you know, analytics is something that, you know, obviously as a PR company, traditionally has not been included in the fold, but I think increasingly, especially as I walked around Web 2.0 Expo and, you know, talked to people about, you know, the companies that were interested in talking about potentially needing PR or needing what their needs were in general, analytics comes up a lot, whether it's whatever the conversion metric is, whether it's lead generation or additional page views or time on site, so that engagement that obviously is built into yours. How does that generally work? So, for example, you know, the classic question for me would be, you know, if a company spends a lot of time and money to do pixel-based tracking with, let's say, Omniture, can that be integrated into yours, or do you provide an analytic baseline or both for companies that would be interested?
Yeah, it's really both. You know, Omniture, they do some amazing things. One of the things that we've been hearing from customers is that, you know, they get these great Omniture reports. By the time they have a chance to look through them all, figure out what is relevant and useful in there, and then they figure out how to respond to the data that they're seeing, and then they go to their engineering and IT team to push it live on the site. You know, it can take from weeks to months, kind of like the doctor hits your knee and 3 months later you're kicking. So there's a ton of valuable data. The question is, how can I respond, how quickly can I respond, and how relevant can my response be? The nice thing, so we can tie into that, the nice thing with Nitro, the name of our product, is that right now, when you see the data, that non-technical person can go in and make the changes on the site right now that are appropriate. So it's really, you know, getting that relevant and resonant answer or response to your user at the right time. We tie in with the short answer. there's more to say, of course, but that I think that ties in being able to get the relevant message at the right time to the right person.
And so how do you test that? So another question is, a lot of people that a lot of people in the Valley started really looking more seriously at Omniture when they purchased a very popular A-B split testing company. And suddenly the offering looked a lot more attractive because they were able to then test their websites, you know, mainly landing or home pages, marketing-based pages, to make sure that they were doing the job. And there were some interesting statistics that came out of that. But what is interesting to me in this scenario is how are you, you know, it brings up the question of how are you testing what does or doesn't work in a live community environment? Are you comparing the kinds of installs that you're doing, or is there a test environment that you use with some beta testers? How is it that you come up with, you know, the right kind of incentives? I don't want to say scheme, but scenario or.
Yeah.
You know, the right side kind of incentives for the different companies, because obviously in seeing and in looking through the Nitro product, there are different kinds of incentives, obviously, for the different companies that you work with.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, basically it's that when we talk about the heavy lifting, a lot of people feel that, oh, gosh, the tech side of this must be very difficult to implement. What we've been finding is that the real heavy lifting kind of occurs, as you're bringing it up there, it's before the implementation, because one needs and wants to figure out, hey, what are the user behaviors that we want to incent, reward, and recognize? What are the mechanics that we want to use to do so? You know, does our community, are they more altruistic? Do they care about their avatar? Do they care about points or levels or, you know, what is it that will be, that will resonate with them? And so it's thinking that through and recognizing how will this program evolve going
right.
forward. So once that's really thought through well, you know, the folks, people at Salesforce.com or who are using Salesforce.com, they tend to be pretty competitive and they like to be recognized and rewarded when they do, you know, hey, I finished a training. Cool, I got my badge. I like to show that off. I like when my boss walks behind me and sees I earned 10 badges, or she sees that I earned 4 trophies for that I've been filling out all my contact information. So if I'm aiming at kids or primarily women, you know, what are the different mechanics that work with those folks? And that, and then so to kind of continue to answer the second part of your question is, yes, there can be testing environments. One can, within the program, say, okay, I'm going to send a notification to these 20,000 users, whereas I won't send it to these other 20,000 users, and let's see the response. And then very quickly, you know, within a day or two, oh, wow, that's working. Okay, I'm going to send that out to all million of my users or whatever the number might be because it's working. Or, hey, it's not working. I don't want to waste my consumer's mind share on sending out that notification. So there are a number of ways, yeah, that one can do it, you know, on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, week-to-week A-B testing way. And it's really just up to the creativity of my implementers, my client relations people, and then the folks on the customer side who are figuring out, okay, what type of program, what do we want to incent and reward. And, you know, there are some real do's and don'ts in mm-hmm. rewarding your customers.
Tell us about those, because I think that's a very interesting thing that you and I have spoken about offline that I think is something that would be of interest to people just generally. I mean, I think some of these things are applicable to absolutely every sort of transparent and really honest communication in the social media world, period.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, for example, one thing that we advise our customers, we're very careful when we bring this up to them, is that if you are going to give your consumers rewards that they can place a monetary value on, that's very dangerous. For example, oh, you'll get a $10 gift card if you earn 10,000 points or if you earn a particular trophy. And what people will immediately do generally is go, oh, I'll earn that $10 gift card, and it took me 5 hours to do the things on the site to earn my $10 gift card. Hey, that's $2 an hour. I don't want to be wasting my time on that. However, that same person, if they, after performing those tasks or doing those challenges to get them to that point, if you say, hey, you are now a super user on the site and you've earned a trophy or you've been able to unlock content or there's some other type of virtual more reward, then they will do that and they're encouraged by that and they enjoy that. But if you tie it directly to something monetary, it all of a sudden it kind of brings up an example, kind of like at Thanksgiving when I go to my grandma's house, at the end of the meal, if I drop a $100 bill on the table and say, hey, grandma, that was great, thank you, she's going to look at me like I'm nuts. You know, she'll be, what are you talking about? All I want is a hug. But if I try to give a hug to the chef at Bix as my payment for my great steak that he just made me, he's going to say, excuse me, where's your $100 bill? So one has to know and recognize what consumers will respond to and then put the program together appropriately.
Which brings me to another question. So, you know, obviously doing my homework before we chatted, looking at the breakdown, you know, you talked about some of the top schools. I know you went to Yale, that of the folks that are driving this. And I hear a lot of reward schemes that are about the kinds of things that really appeal to that type A personality. Your, according to LinkedIn, your top school is 16% of your staff went to Stanford University. your median age is 34 and you're 80% male, which makes me go, what do you know about the baby boomer female? And
right.
How are you appealing to soccer moms who maybe didn't go to college at all, but are whip smart, and
right.
We know that they're a huge part of, for example, the Comcast initiative. I can imagine, you know, that would be an area where you would want to be very aware of, and I'm sure you guys are smart and have thought this through, so I'm just curious what the answer is to that from your
yeah.
point of view.
So there are really kind of three parts to that. One, our CEO, who came on board officially in December, he is the former chief of insights at Yahoo. He was over there for, I think, about 3 years. And before that, he was president and CEO of ComScore. So he really comes from a data background and analytics background of really understanding human behavior and customer behavior and tying into that. And he is not one of the 34-year-old ones. He's a few years older than that. And our director of client relations, the one who really is the the backbone of designing the programs properly with our customers, happens to be one of the women here, Molly Kittle, and she does a fantastic job both on the research side and, you know, understanding what is it that will be applicable to the folks of that customer. And finally, with our roadmap, the way our product has evolved is about 95% based on our customers and what they've been requesting and the needs that they've been seeing. I had a prospect in December say, well, hey, Kevin, the product's great, we love it, but we need to be able to support multiple avatars. You know, right now you only have one, can have one avatar. So I went to my engineering team and I said, hey, you know, this, we're going to need multiple avatars if we want to get these guys as a customer. Well, 3 days later, my engineer said, oh, hey, Kevin, by the way, that's going to be live next week. And I'm like, wonderful. So what we really are working hard to do is keep our ear to the ground and our ear to the market, and our product is evolving with the market to really take advantage of what our customers and future customers are needing, which once again kind of ties back to that build versus buy. You know, if people are building it themselves, they don't necessarily know what they're going to be needing or wanting in 3 or 6 months. Whereas we are, that's really our evolution path, as well as the expertise of Peter Dayball and others here on staff.
And I should say, too, that in my research, I know that the director of biz dev, I would assume Molly reports to her as Barbara Reed. So, again, another woman in the fold there in a very high-level position. So it's
absolutely.
The 20% that are female are not just getting coffee for people. Hopefully nobody is getting for coffee for people anymore except themselves. But in any event, kind of going back to, some of the things that we talked about in terms of engagement. So last year at Web 2.0, a lot of people were talking about the move from unique page views being a metric, people, meaning people or companies. Usually when I say people, I mean people within companies in this context.
Right.
We're looking at the shift towards engagement. So video was very attractive for that reason, because people, if they like what they watch, are watching for a long time, and you can serve ads in unique ways. Interestingly, some of the video vendors that are the one that I know has been around a really long time, and has made it through some interesting changes that I spoke with at Web 2.0 Expo, is saying it's harder than ever for them to monetize video, which makes me think that some of these other types of user engagement, like you're talking about spending lots of time filling a cubicle at Dunder Mifflin Infinity, is maybe a way that companies are looking to engage. So my question is really about the different, and I don't know how much you're a part of this, so please defer defer to others if this isn't your particular area of expertise. But what I'm curious about is kind of trends that you might be seeing in the customers that you work with in terms of goal setting. What is the engagement metric that they're looking at? Is it an amount of time? Is it the amount of places that they're visiting? So looking, at an example with one of our clients who have a fantastic user community, Pentaho, open source company. I just love those guys. Love their product, love them. I love all of our clients, but I really do love what they're doing with their user community. They have wikis there that they allow, people to use for all different kinds of things. So, in talking with them about, what are your goals there? What are you doing there? It's interesting to hear on the inside kind of what's going on, but I don't get enough of a sense of that to get a sense of trends. So what I'm looking for from you is some insight as to what those trends might be.
Yeah, right now, it is fascinating, especially with the economically challenging times we're in right now. People are really trying to grab, hey, what's the tree that I know I can grab onto that's going to have the roots that keep me here?
Exactly.
And what our publishers, for example, you know, they're seeing that their ad rates and the ad spend is plummeting, and they need to think about more than just putting out great content. They need to think about how can we monetize this and how can we push the folks to stay there longer. And then the next piece is, how can I have a different story for my advertisers on my site? And you know, with the CPMs dropping, there needs to be something else that will get the advertiser to say, oh, okay, that's worth it. And I think you're hitting on the crux of the problem, and I'm not an expert on this, but definitely part of it is, okay, if you have something, you know, hey, your ad shows up on the right side of the page, I promise people will see it, that's not working anymore.
Right.
But if I can go to those brands and those advertisers and say, hey, look, we have this engagement strategy, and we're finding that people love to decorate their kitchen at betterrecipes.com. So they have their kitchen, betterrecipes.com, and as they're decorating it, you know, they're wanting it to look nice, and so All Clad will very much want to have All Clad products that people can purchase with their virtual kitchen bucks that they're earning for being engaged in the site. So All Clad sees this prospect, you know, this potential, you know, this user down the road saying, wow, if someone is on betterrecipes.com, they're submitting recipes, will know about our product, they may want our product, and if they're engaged on this site and they're spending more time on the site so that they can earn this virtual money so they can decorate their virtual kitchen with our product, that's a very strong story to sell to advertisers. It's not just an All Clad ad on the right side of the page or on the banner saying, buy our product. It's people choosing, hey, I want to put an All Clad product on my stove in my virtual kitchen. And then the next step is, with our analytics and our messaging, you know, people are talking to you through their actions. They're speaking to the company, you know, this is what I'm doing. Are you listening to what I'm doing? And if my customer is stocking their kitchen with Coke products and with All Clad, then gosh darn it, I should listen and be sure to be offering them Coke product promotions or All Clad promotions. So it's really bringing it to that next level of, yes, not only am I listening to you, but I am responding in an appropriate manner. If you fill your fridge with Coke and I'm sending you Pepsi ads, I'm not listening to you. So being able to really dig deeper into those analytics and what the consumers are wanting, a lot of these advertisers and brands, that's something that they're really responding well to, rather than just more banner ads.
So those are all really good business to consumer examples. And more and more companies, as I said yesterday, I spent my Web 2.0 day on, you know, an enterprise 2.0 type track. There wasn't one called that, but that's what I gravitated towards in whatever track it was. So in the enterprise space, what are you seeing? So those are some great examples, and maybe you can't reveal any yet. But,
right,
you know, looking at more of the business-to-business value, and I know you can, I know that there is a business-to-business value, but how do the examples change? Or are they changed? Or are they much different?
Yeah, I think once again, you know, for those B2B, it's about driving the behavior of those people. So let's say, you know, engineers. So a number of engineers go to the Intel site because they need to learn about the latest chips that are coming out. If Intel, within their community, is able to get folks to stay on their support community rather than their competitor down the road, if they're able to have those engineers spend more time with Intel, if they're able to do that in a way of, hey, as you are answering more questions or asking more questions or spending time on our site, we're recognizing you appropriately, and whether that is, you know, a badging or unlocking specific content or, you know, being the first to hear about new releases or, hey, I mean, at Salesforce.com, they're talking about, hey, perhaps we offer a lunch with Mark Benioff. For the people who are most active or engaged in the community. So it's kind of figuring out what is attractive to the folks in your community and then offering that in some manner to then drive that engagement online and more time, more page views, whatever your metric might be. The nice thing is if one is thinking strategically about this, you know, it's what are the behaviors we care about? What if we find at Intel that when people go, you know, when they go to the build your own chip or solve your problem page and they start playing around with it, you know, they're six times more likely to then stick with us going forward rather than going to the AMD competitive product, then it makes sense for Intel to put some type of carrot there to get those people to do that. And if they're not doing that, you know, they're losing business.
Interestingly, it's a good example too, because I spoke with Michael Brito from Intel a couple weeks ago, who's on the B2C side, and we've been talking with the gentleman who does the B2B piece, who actually works out of the Sacramento area, about potentially coming on the show. So I'll have him listen to what you've just said and respond when he eventually comes on. But I want to ask you about another key thing that, you know, of course, I've either heard from our clients or I've heard from potential clients or I've heard from people at Web 2.0 Expo. How does that get me qualified leads? Mm-hmm. Do you get that question, and can you answer it in any kind of way that would make sense to the average Joe CEO?
Yeah, that's a good question. Qualified leads.
So one way that, as a strategist, I might advise them to give you how I'm thinking about this is, in terms of content, you know, don't give away the store. So if you're going to do, you know, a long video segment, you know, obviously provide a smaller snippet of that that has its own value. So not like part of the story. You know, kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean 2, where you knew you had to watch the third movie to know what the conclusion was. But, you know, something like an abstract, something that analysts have done really well for a long time. So if you go to Forrester, you might be enticed and get enough of the story from the abstract. But then, make you want more by either filling out information that tells you whether or not they are qualified, quote unquote, because of their title and their ability to make decisions, or whether they're somebody you would maybe want to move to your community or just message for additional opportunities and keep track of over time as they potentially move up the food chain, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that there's some sort of sense of what you give different levels of consumers who may or may not be able to influence purchasing decisions.
Right. Yeah, and I think there are a couple ways. On the kind of the B2C-ish first, like Comcast, one of the things they do, you can go on there and start playing the trivia game that they're using to kind of hook people in, and people will play the trivia.
Is that the CNET game?
Comcast, you know, so Comcast.net, if you go to they've got a couple hundred. It started out as maybe 20 or 30 trivia games, and now they've got basically from pop culture to finance to sports to whatever you're looking at on the different channels, you can play a trivia game. And what people do is they're answering the questions, because people tend to love trivia. And then as they're doing well and they see, oh, hey, there's a leaderboard here. And, oh, hey, I want to be on the leaderboard. And they'll also see, oh, hey, there's a news feed, and look what these other people are doing. And they see all these people have these fun avatars. And they're like, well, I want my avatar. So they click on create your free avatar, and of course then that prompts them to sign in. And they've been getting, I wish I could be public, but astounding sign-in results.
So I can give a personal example over the holidays when we had friends here from overseas, and we were watching We were using, we have Comcast. We were using CNET, S-C-E-N-E, it, so that you watch a scene from something, and then there's trivia related to it. What we were most disappointed with in that on-demand product was that there was no leaderboard, no tracking, so we created our own point system around it. So the first thing we were doing was we were basically doing what you guys have now done. So as a Comcast customer, I've seen what you guys are doing, again, doing my homework and making sure I saw, I've seen the latest kinds of things, really intriguing, and kind of comparing what we were doing to come up with our own little point system to the kinds of things that are for different games as kind of an example of, you know, what I think people are hardwired for. You know, for us, I guess it was we were thinking of board games we played as kids maybe. I don't know where that came from, but we were immediately thinking of who was going to win something, and it would be non-monetary, a pat on the back, or being the cool guy that night, or maybe you got to play bass instead of guitar on Rock Band, or whatever it was. But that's kind of how we work things. So that's I think that's an example, if you think of it that way, that people kind of can start to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, people talk about competition, but in general what I've been finding is that one can really use the word comparatician, in that there are a few people that really, really need or want to be number one, but most people kind of just, they want to be comparative and want to know how they're doing in relation to other people. So when you started creating your little leaderboards and your points for it to see how well you're doing, you wanted to compare yourselves to either each other or other folks who might be doing it. And I think it's really, you know, I mean, it's a human instinct to know, where do I fit in?
Absolutely.
So if you're able to give your customers the tools to see where they fit in, it can be very powerful. And so that, I mean, one thing that this just spurred the thought for me, for Intel, if when a developer or an engineer goes to an Intel page, if there's a little quiz on the page that says, what type of Intel developer are you? Take this quiz and find out. And then, you know, they answer 10 questions, and then they say, oh, you're a level 6, or whatever it might be, or, oh, take another one to you know, what department would you fit in, or, you know, what technology are you most interested in? And talk about a way to qualify leads. You know, if you've got that little quiz that then records that data, and then you're able to respond appropriately, that's something that can be very powerful. And then, of course, oh, hey, sign in to get your results. Or if you sign in, we'll give you, you know, we'll unlock certain content for you so you can dig deeper into our latest, you know, our newest rev of product. So, yeah, I think you
hit
the nail on the head there.
Yeah, I that reminds me. So I'm thinking, I've been working today on a blog post that I'm putting a lot of thought into, because I actually, you know, thinking about Web 2.0, and, you know, obviously we'll have a lot of content on blogs.eastwick.com about my being there and all the people that I talked to, but I continually thought about, so, you know, one of the themes and, you know, the keynote was doing more with less in the down economy. Well, for me, I'm wondering, you know, how creative is that? I mean, isn't that kind of what we logically thought we would have? Yeah, exactly. And not to put Tim or O'Reilly down, but I just thought, God, that's kind of a no-brainer. But I really, as I went through, so I started kind of thinking of my own themes, and the theme that kept coming up for me was the age of relevance. Even in the context of Ignite, which was the kickoff party, if you will, but it's where what they do is, for folks that don't know, they have a certain number of speakers that are allowed 5 minutes and a certain finite number of slides to get a point across, and you see who does really well and who doesn't. And, you know, kind of reading the crowd and talking to someone who is also a social media strategist, so we're standing right there, we're kind of thinking some of the same things. And again, people were looking to see what was relevant to them, what actually mattered to them. And I think in the technology realm, increasingly, and I see this because I am a huge LinkedIn fan, and you know, use that as a core recommendation, generally speaking, for a lot of our clients and prospects, because I just think it's, you know, the background of it and where it came from, which is the kind of development community and web development community that you're talking about, have, you know, I mean, they basically built this powerhouse that C-levels now are using to be able to make business decisions and get information about companies that they may or may not do business with at a particular level. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. And then it has that whole user-generated element with Business Week Exchange and Capital IQ being a piece of the company's pages. So I think more and more we're going to see this interrelationship of companies in their effort to be relevant to us, either through rewards or through the kinds of things that they put on sites to, again, guard that all-important content to get to their end goal.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I want to hear your response.
I think relevance, I think that's a wonderful point to bring up. Sometimes I go to Amazon.com. I don't know what book I want to read, so I just go to Amazon.com and go to my account, and they tell me the books that I like, and they're right on. I mean, they know what I've bought in the past, so they have a pretty darn good idea, and they do a great job of figuring out what I'm going to like in the future, and that's extremely relevant to me. If Amazon sent me an email every day just telling me about random bestsellers that weren't relevant to me, I'd delete that email immediately and I put it on my spam list. But when a company or a brand can be relevant to me, I want them to talk to me more. And so having those tools to be listening appropriately really gives any brand or company a huge head start on their competition. Peter, my CEO, brings up often, you know, most companies do a pretty good job of listening and they do a pretty good job of acting. The problem is the listening group doesn't communicate all that much with the acting group, and there tends to be quite a bit of delay between the two. So we need to have those tools where we are listening and responding, and that those two things get closer and closer together, and really they should be instantaneous, right? I'm listening and I'm responding appropriately, and I'm responding in a way that's relevant to you. And when I do that to a consumer, the consumer just wants to keep the conversation going. They want to be more and more involved with me. I think many people think that about Apple. They feel that Apple always tends to hit them right where they want to be hit. So I definitely want to know what's coming out with, what is Apple coming out with, because I know that it's going to be relevant to me. And so, you know, our product really aims at helping to solve that, in that, you know, I can be listening and responding right now, and I can be seeing exactly what they're doing, and I can respond appropriately now without having to get it through engineering or read through huge reports or whatever it might be. I can be relevant. So, yeah, I think that's a great point you bring up there, to be relevant.
And I think the nice thing about it, too, for me, and thinking it really, and really, really obviously spending a lot of time thinking about it, is in this time of layoffs where, you know, again, you read over and over about the statistics or numbers of people, and, you know, having been laid off before in the past, you know, it's not personal, you're part of a group, or it's, you know, it isn't. It's business decisions, and we all know that. And knock on wood, you know, we know how lucky we are to be working at jobs we love these days. But, you know, really, you know, reaching the people that are laid off and maybe have more time to spend online and engaging them in a way is really nice. And also kind of coming out of an election season, too, where I think if I heard the phrase "the American people" one more time, my head was going to explode, because my thought was, I'm investing my time in so many, personal interest type of campaigns and things, that they know who I are, they know what my interests are, and if they did any tracking, being an analytics geek like I am, and you know I am, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to figure it out. So, again, boil it down to what's relevant to me. And I think that it starts to really, really make sense and take hold. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, of course, about competitors in this space, because, of course, this is a interesting, evocative space. I've seen EA come out with some interesting little widgets and different things that make me wonder what their business is evolving to, or if they have another unit evolving into something. But something that caught my boss's eye, and she shared with me yesterday, and I've, of course, looked into as well, is something that social media today is doing to help enterprise technology companies work with social media in a way that they typically don't mix, using big names like Oracle, Teradata, and SAP. So how is it that your product is the same, different, or just like what social media today is trying to do?
Yeah, so I think we would be a great complement to them, because I think they're working very hard, and it appears that they're doing a very good job of getting those groups of people together to be communicating and really getting a lot of value from each other. The next step then is how can they then ensure that competitors that are trying to do the same thing as them don't pull those people away from them? And one way to do that is to allow the folks that are on those sites to build up their status and to be recognized for what they have contributed. And that's where we would really just tie in with that. We're not a community platform. What our job is to help make those communities far more effective. So with what they're building, they would use our tools to really bring it to the next level of how they can then drive those behaviors and help to recognize folks who are doing things of value for the company and the community so that people will stay. And once again, right now, if there was a LinkedIn clone that started tomorrow that was twice as good, I'm not going to leave LinkedIn, right? I've got too much invested there. I've got my contacts. I've got it's all there. It would have to be an incredible value proposition for me to leave LinkedIn. So if the social media company there that you're referring to, if they are able to build that loyalty and that people are invested, then even if there are better mousetraps, people aren't going to leave because they're tied in. They like their status and they like where they are in that community. So it really is a point of differentiation for them if they're using these types of engagement tools to make their sites even stickier and better.
So we only have a few more minutes, and keeping that in mind, I like the idea that, in comparing, you've said that you're platform agnostic. It now sounds like you're saying, too, that one stake in the ground is almost that you're content agnostic, because part of what social media today is trying to do is really do something along the lines of content strategy, kind of what I mentioned before, and we used two examples that I feel like complemented one another. So in a way, if you look at social media today, and they may they're saying they're aggregating blogs, which makes me think blog network. So maybe give me an example of how, so Glam Media's claim to fame and their presence, the amount of wealth that they have garnered is really comes from blog network. So how might you or your company, or would your company be able to work with a blog network?
Yeah, so definitely. So when you say a blog network, can you give me a little more of an example?
Sure. So TMCNet has a blog network where folks, a couple of our C-level clients are actually blogging on their platform, and they're using some of the content on their own corporate blogs as well. In the Glam example, they brought together different blogs, and it sounds like the Social Media Today example, again, which I don't have a ton of knowledge about, but from what I've read and what I've listened to, sounds like it's aggregating blog content from independent bloggers or people that want to be part of a larger community, I would assume for traffic or monetary reasons. So looking at it that way, so they could be on different platforms, but it could be a branding that brings them together.
Right.
It could be traffic assignment. Any thoughts on that come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, if I'm understanding it correctly, I mean, those places where people are congregating, if they want to continue to have more and more people congregate there and people to have come back, you want to show them that you're listening to those people and that you're providing some additional value besides maybe just the content. Like, they need to think in the marketing sense as well. Like, hey, you've been here four times this week. Let me give you a little Yahoo or a little slap on the back saying thank you. And then, oh, hey, these they're listening to me. They care. Or if I made a comment, a notifier would pop up and say, hey, appreciate the comment. Let us know if there's anything else we can do so that our site is more relevant to you. Having the tools to do that is actually pretty darn difficult, but that's something that our product provides. So it really, once again, I kind of hesitate to say, hey, look, we work with anybody, but the way this product has been built, it is content agnostic. The goal is to make any content addictive, right? I want to come back to this site, whether it's technology or whether it's a recipe site or a media site or a gaming site. And as you mentioned, a number of the game companies like EA, they're putting together a number of these things within their own. Our biggest competition tends to be people trying to build it themselves.
Well, on that note, I'm going to have to cut you off, Kevin. I've loved speaking with you. We only have a few seconds left. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay, and with Kevin Spear of Bunchball. You can catch him online at bunchball.com, and I definitely encourage you to check out their product. It's an interesting offering, and there's so much more that could be said about it. Next week, we have a very special mystery guest that's to be announced on our blog this week, the same place you can keep up with the latest on our show and Eastwick in general. That's blogs.eastwick.com. And everybody, after a great Web 2.0 Expo week, thank you to all the people as well that have given me great ideas that you'll hopefully be seeing on blogs.eastwick.com throughout the week to come about everything from the age of relevance to Enterprise 2.0. And on that note, have a great weekend. And again, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.